Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition and episode of Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. Formerly from 89.5, and soon to be back after Labor Day on WSOU. Right now, using the platform of Blog Talk Radio, we begin our broadcast with a Quest moment. A cornucopia of physics dictates that where there are vibrations, there must be a medium, and all vibrations possess a wave nature. You see, in our community, our art is, in fact, an in-spirit medium through which our airwaves travel. Where there is no medium, there are no vibrations. Good morning, everyone out there, and more importantly, the people on the line. Let's make some waves. I'd like to introduce Mr. Shelton Harris for our first segment of Chains of Events.
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah, Chains of Events.
Good morning.
Are just what they are. They reveal the interpretation of one event to another. And today, the link in the chain that we're going to be talking about is from The Last Poets. They have, you know, they were really one of my favorite spoken word people way before that became a thing, you know. And this particular poem is called Hands Off. And it goes like this. Tell me not that I'm a dreamer for the things I feel and see, or that nothing can be accomplished from the things I wish to be. Tell me not that I'm a fanatic for the things that I feel inside. They are flowers of oppression born of pain I cannot hide. Do not look upon my actions as acts of one insane when I take up modern weapons to avenge my father's name. Let your eyes scan on the ghettos through your books of history, and you'll understand this feeling and just how it came to be. Sure, I must admit I'm bitter for the precious blood I've bled and for the years of cruel oppression you leaped on my head. For the rape of my grandmothers and the mulattoes that you left, and for the many, 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 many years of slavery and legacy of death. Tell me not that I'm a dreamer. Oh, no, it's you that cannot see. I am just another victim of a cruel reality. What manner of man is this, I ask, who roams the seven seas, who graces the skies with birds of iron and wanders weary pleas, who walks into another's home and takes his property, then slays the man, his wife, and child in the name of liberty? What manner of beast is this, I ask, who drops a napalm from the sky, then sends my sons away to war to maim and kill and die? What manner of man is this, I ask, who arrogantly displays his might? What manner of man is this, my friend? Needless to say, he's white. So take your hands off me, white folks. I've done you no wrong. I'm only guilty of making you strong. I built all your cities. I worked in your mines. I fought to protect you many a time. It was I who told you what it was to be brave. I had great civilizations when you lived in caves. I taught you what soap was when you dyed yourselves blue. I taught you of planting and harvesting, too. I showed you that clothes were to cover your backs when you were wearing wolfskins and running in packs. When you knew nothing of the barrier of sound, it was I that taught you that this planet was round. In Palmero, Sicily, Italy, and Spain, I left monuments of my grandeur and fame. During your dark ages when your people were blind, I built universities to enlighten your mind. When your homeland was weak and your people was poor, it was I who brought you to America's shore. Why, you didn't even know how to survive. I showed you medicine to keep you alive. How earnest you seemed, how well you did learn. Now vow a reward I receive in return. But time is on my side. I'm sure you must know that the day will arrive when you reap what you sow. For I gave you religion, and you know it's a fact that the Christ and the Buddha and Muhammad were black. I taught you to dance. I taught you to sing. You repaid me with treachery, slavery, and chains. So don't touch me, Whitey, and don't look surprised. No, I'm no longer fooled by your tricks and your lies. I'm aware of your game and of your history, and I'm aware of the Judas that you've been to me. So watch out for me, white folks. It's just a matter of time. I'll soon be together. then vengeance is mine. I love that poem, even when I first heard it 50 years ago. And, you know, and
are you really that old?
Yeah, well, you know, I saw it on the television.
Well, no, I have a question for you. How has the lyrics and music of the last poets affected some of the hip-hop and rap today, or has it at all?
Well, at first, I think it was a really strong influence. And then Bill Scott Heron, the Watts Prophets, all of those people that were doing this way before so-called hip-hop started, like in the 70s. These guys were like before that. But they influenced them to the extent where what we call conscious rappers, those are the ones that really use that influence and let it grow within their genre of music. But, you know, once hip-hop became commercialized and people didn't think it was a fad, that's when the corporations got into it and changed the whole meaning of what hip-hop actually was. Because it's not really about rap. It's not about rhyming. It's a culture that we built in from the nothing we had in our inner cities. And it just spread around the world because everybody else could relate. So they were very influential in getting people started. You know, they're not as influential now. They are definitely some older brothers, but they're still out here. They still doing stuff, and they still need to be heard.
Well, thank you for allowing us to hear, because I know people like Walter may not even know. I mean, as young as he is, he might not have been exposed to the lyrics and the music of the last poets, and he might not even know the influence that they've had on modern day contemporary hip hop and rap as we know it today. I'd like for you to continue on to your next segment.
Okay, Curtis, it's just really an exposure and analysis of artists and their work before the curtain and behind the curtain. For many recording artists and companies have grown rich in the support of our community, but a lot of them only benefited themselves and never got to benefiting the actual community themselves. But this individual that we're going to talk about today has been around a while and has touched a lot of us in front of and behind the curtain. His name is Quincy Jones. And I'm going to do like a short bio about him. Then I'm going to go through all the different organizations and things that he's been a part of. Quickly, he was born in Chicago in 1933. He moved to Washington State, where at a young age he learned to play the trumpet and played with at the time, unknown piano player called Ray Charles. He went to Berklee School of Music in Boston, where he played with the Lionel Hampton Big Band. Soon after that, he was sought as an arranger for numerous artists, including Cannonball Adderley, Count Basie, Clifford Brown, Dinah Washington, along with many others. And as a trumpeter, he toured with Dizzy Gillespie's Big Band around the world in 1956. In 1961, he was one of the first vice presidents of a major record label, Mercury Records at the time. He continued his writing and arranging for many singers like Frank Sinatra, Peggy Lee, and Billy Eckstine. He composed soundtracks for many movies, including In the Heat of the Night and The Pawnbroker, which he won Academy Awards for. After brain surgery, he had a brain aneurysm, and after brain surgery, he turned his focus from jazz to pop and started his own record label called Quest. Sounds familiar. In 1980, he's won 75 Grammys, 7 Academy Awards, an Emmy, the Kennedy Honor for Arts, the National Medal of Arts, and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And at 87, he's still at it. He wrote soundtracks for 24 movies. He had 16 studio albums and 3 live albums, and produced albums for many artists that have went on to be one of the greatest people that's ever did it, like Michael Jackson. It's the list goes on and on. But that's a bit about who he was. What he actually did was started a couple of foundations that helped people. There's one foundation was called We Are Family Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization that helps fund people who are struggling in the arts, like the artists and stuff that can't really take care of themselves, you know. And he has a thing called the Quincy Jones Foundation. And its mission was to improve the quality of life for families around the world that are living in poverty and ensuring that people and children around the world don't suffer. He's also been affiliated with the American Foundation for AIDS Research, with the Children Mending Hearts, with the Exploring the Arts, with the Global Down Syndrome Foundation, the Jazz Foundation of America, the Nelson Mandela Center for Memory, the Rape Foundation, the Treatment Action Campaign, UNICEF, United Negro College Fund, and We Are the World Foundation, which we just talked about a little bit here. He's definitely had his hand in a lot of stuff in front of and behind the curtain, and is a definitely good brother that we need to keep in mind, because we seem to forget the great ones when they're not in your face all the time.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's just a small blurb. The brother been knowing this for like 60 years, and you really can't put that within, it's hard to like encapsulate all of that he's done for himself and for others in a segment. That's like that could be a whole course in college, is talking about Quincy Jones and what he's done and how he did it.
Right. For current purposes, he also was responsible for the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with Will Smith, if I'm correct.
That's right. That was part of his production company. And Fresh Prince. And go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Finish your statement.
No, I was just going to say he had this foundation called the Listen Up Foundation that was really instrumental introducing younger artists to the music world through his production companies, you know, the sister Sadale Garrett, who wrote like a lot of stuff for Tevin Campbell. She wrote stuff for Michael Jackson. All this stuff was under the tutelage of Quincy Jones, Patty Austin, James Ingram. All of these, they might not be great artists today, but they had their moment in the spotlight during my tenure. And, you know, and he was instrumental in all of them. The Brothers Johnson, you know, the list goes on and on.
Right. There's a saying that goes, never look down on another person unless you're willing to help them up. And I have to say that Quincy Jones is one who has definitely done more than his fair share of helping others in society. And this is something that in the entertainment business, music and sitcoms and movies. But this is something that the curtain segment tries to expose and enlighten other people to know. You know, many times we talk about musical artists and their fame and popularity and how much money they have and how much bling bling. But, you know, those types of things are not important unless you're able to assist and help your brother and your sister. And Quincy Jones exemplifies that to the hilt. You know, and so that's all I have to add, unless you have any more words.
I would like to see how other people will feel about it, because he's always been one of my heroes from way back. Matter of fact, I kind of liked his dad, like, albums better than I liked his pop albums. You know, because my uncles and them was hipping me to Quincy Jones stuff when I was a kid. Killer Joe and Guru Matara and and just the movie soundtracks, like the music from the Pawnbroker, and in Cold Blood, he did all that stuff. You know, he produced
right.
a lot of stuff for Miles Davis when he was coming up with big band stuff. He's a giant. He's a true giant.
Did he do the music soundtrack for Mission Impossible?
No, that was Lalo Schifrin. But still, same idea, though. You know, the same idea.
Oh. Okay. Okay. I have a little confusion going there. All right. Great job. So now we turn over to our student host. Good morning, Walter Pierce.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
And for today, I will start off with the definition of today. And the intro for that is, this segment provides the listeners with the words and their meaning so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And today's definition is bravery. The definition of bravery is courageous behavior of character, which a lot of people already know. But the reason I'm putting that as the word of today or the definition. The reason I'm putting that as the definition for today is because I'm about to talk about two other people who showed and exempt bravery. African Americans throughout their history in America have shown bravery by slavery, constantly fighting for their freedom, even when they were threatened. We were constantly threatened and basically supposed to be scared by the top white people in today's society, but we never backed down and we kept fighting, and that is what bravery is. So to go into the diamonds of today, I will read the intro, which is, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. And the first diamond of today is Ellen Craft. It starts by saying, Ellen, the child of her mother's master, had such a light skin that those who did not know she was a slave thought she was a member of the master's family. Ellen was not treated as badly as many of the other slaves, but the master's wife was so jealous that she took 11-year-old Ellen away from her mother and gave Ellen to her own daughter as a wedding present. Being taken away from her mother changed Ellen. The ordeal made her realize that the life of a slave was bad, no matter how well one was treated. When Ellen got older, she married William Crabb, another slave. He was a very talented carpenter and cabinet maker. The couple spent many evenings discussing the problems of slavery. One night, William told Ellen of an idea he had. Since Ellen was often mistaken for a white person, she could disguise herself as his master, traveling with William as her slave, and they could escape to the north together. Ellen agreed to try it. Disguised as master and slave, Ellen and William traveled north by train from Georgia to Philadelphia. Ellen cut her hair short and dressed as a man. She wore a green tinted glasses to hide her eyes. She limped, wore her arm in a sling, covered her face with a bandage, and pretended to be hard of hearing and very ill. William explained to anyone who asked that his master was going to Philadelphia for better medical care. The trip took 4 days, and at each stop along the way, the couple became more and more nervous, but they escaped successfully. When they arrived in Philadelphia, sympathetic abolitionists gave them shelter and protection from slave hunters until they could flee to England. They started a family and learned how to read and write. In 1860, William Craft wrote a very exciting book about the escape entitled Running 1,000 Miles for Freedom. In 1868, after slavery was abolished, the Crafts and their five children returned to the United States, bought a plantation, and opened a trade school for African Americans. Thank you.
Okay. What motivated you to basically bring this information to the surface?
Well, what motivated me was first on the definition of slavery, and I have a list of just people who probably a lot of African Americans or just people in general do not know about. I didn't know a lot about Ellen Craft reading about her, but I now did some research on her, and I found out how brave she was to be able to put a stone ball to travel north, pretend to be a slave owner, to travel north with her husband so they could escape the freedom. And, you know, I just want to let the audience know about these somewhat unknown people that people probably don't know a lot about. And I guess that could lead me into my second diamond of today, which is Bessie Coleman. It starts by saying, when Bessie was 7 years old, her father, who was part African and part Native American, returned to Oklahoma Indian Territory, leaving her mother behind to raise the family alone. As a result, Bessie's life as a child was hard. She picked cotton and helped her mother do laundry and make money for family expenses. Unable to find satisfactory work after graduation from high school, Bessie left Texas and joined her brother in Chicago to make a better life for herself. There, she trained as a manicurist and took a job at a barbershop. Still not satisfied with her life, Bessie became interested in flying airplanes and tried to enroll in aviation school. But because she was black and a woman, she was turned down. She sought the advice of a friend, newspaper editor Robert Abbott, who told Bessie that she should go to flying school in Europe, where she would not have faced such prejudice. With the help, Bessie studied French, saved her money, and sailed to France. After making 2 trips to Europe and studying with French and German aviators, Bessie became the first black woman in the world to receive an international pilot license. Upon her return to Chicago, Bessie started a new career, exhibition flying. Her first show was in 1922 at Chicago's Checkerboard Field. Crowds of spectators turned out to witness the stunts of the brave 29-year-old black woman. Bessie did not disappoint them. Her plane dipped and twirled and made loops in figure eight. The audience was thrilled. Bessie continued to perform in air shows all across the country for the next 4 years. After seeing her, many young African Americans were eager to learn how to fly. Many contacted Bessie for help. Bessie dreamed of having her own flying school for African Americans one day and began planning for it. She died, however, in an airplane crash during a test flight before that dream could be realized. Bessie would be pleased to know that an organization of young black women pilots has been named in her honor. The goal of the Bessie Coleman Aviators is to bring a thrill of flight to all black and all other women of color interested in aviation and aerospace. Thank you.
Okay. I want to flash back to Ellen Craft because one of the parts of that particular story is how she dresses up and with her husband and actually is able to travel. It reminds me of the minstrel men who traveled around the country performing, and a lot of people look down upon today the minstrel men of the past the early entertainers, the black entertainers who performed in minstrel with cork on their faces. These people ended up being very successful. And as a result, when they actually were not performing and traveling from town to town, they would dress down. They would dress totally inappropriate to fit the time and fit a particular stereotype of a particular poor black person. And that was that enabled them to walk in public unnoticed. But I need to add, at the same time, some of these minstrel men, one I can think of, Bert Williams, was like almost a millionaire. All right? And so, to some extent, in society, when we look back on history, African Americans have had to be somewhat chameleon, being able to blend in and fit in to society's standard. Bessie Coleman is someone who broke the mold. Ms. Harris, you have any comments, concerns?
No, you're absolutely right. A lot of, you know, it was always the ones that stood out that caused problems within white society. You know, because like, if you notice that most of the lynchings and stuff, they were people with shirts and ties on. Those were the business owners. Those were the entrepreneurs in the community. They didn't just snatch up poor people and lynch them. They lynched the people that were trying to help move the people from one place to another. So just like you said, they had to kind of not show where they were, but blend in. Like that chameleon was a good answer. You know, that's what they had to do. And, you know, and a lot of times that's what a lot of people are doing today. You know, because you never know who you're walking and talking to out in the street. You know, that person can be, like you said, that person can be a man that just happened to be in your same community. And that's why it's important to be civil and stuff with whoever you talk to, because you never really know.
Walter, did you know anything about The Last Poet?
No, I didn't.
What did you think about the poem that Mr. Harris led the show with?
You know, I like the wording of it. I like how he was able to, like the poem, how they were talking about how one was teaching another, how a person just kept teaching and kept giving another person knowledge. I really like that part, like just the continuing knowledge of what one person was given to another, how they kept keeping them informed about different things. I like that part of it.
And, yeah, you're talking about the lyrics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, now, what about Quincy Jones? What did you know about Quincy Jones? Do you have any questions about Quincy Jones or comments?
Well, I knew a little bit about him, like how he was a playwright. I didn't know about the other things he did. I didn't know he was like the songwriter, the film director. He did a lot of things that made him very successful. I didn't also know about the medical issue he had, which forced him to stop his music career, I believe. I mean, if you could go back, I guess that would be a question, because I was a little bit confused about, like, what really happened about him. Because you said he had, like, a medical condition that forced him, like, to switch instruments or, like, to stop music in general, I should say. I guess that would be my question.
Mr. Harris, did you hear the question?
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened, he had a brain aneurysm. He was in an accident. And it caused a swelling of one of the veins in his brain. So he had brain surgery, which kept him out of the scenes for like about 5-6 years. And when he came, it's like he had a whole nother mindset. Because instead of being like the the big band jazz guy, he started doing more popular music. His first album when he came back was called Mellow Madness. And that was one of those albums where almost every song on that album was a hit. And he had a string of albums that came after that that was the same flavor. Body Heat, Back on the Block. You know, he really was connecting, you know, what he said he was doing. He was trying to bring the younger people, like he had like rappers and stuff like that, Big Daddy Kane and Ice-T, Melly Mel, they was all on some of his records. He wanted to connect the people who grew up in the same conditions he did and give them like a leg up so that they can move into the next level of the music business. So yeah, he was he was very instrumental in a lot of stuff, but his sickness was he had a brain aneurysm that they had to be like, either, I don't know, was removed or adjusted. I'm not sure exactly what they did. But that kept him off the scene for a while.
Okay, well,
did that help?
we thank God that he's still with us now, today. You know,
no, he's 87 years old and he's still doing it.
Right. Now we're about to bring somebody from our Quest community on for Take 10, and that person is Val. And Val, we call it Take 10, which is community news of interest, and it's sparked by, you know, what's going on, and, you know, you're all our guests, and we'd like for you to participate by sharing some voter information. How about that?
Yes, sir. But I did also want to ask a question. Was Quincy Jones responsible for starting the Jackie Robinson Jazz Festival that they used to have? I don't know if they still have it up in Connecticut every year.
Yes, he was.
Okay, I thought I heard that somewhere. Okay, wonderful. But I want to thank you for introducing me to the Last Poets. Although I have heard of the group before, I never have listened or, really paid attention to the music. But the piece that you read to us today was wonderful, and it brought, you know, it made me think of other people who were around and prominent during that time, like James Baldwin, Muhammad Ali, Dick Gregory. It kind of gives me some kind of vibe about all of those because, you know, everybody had their piece of it, the Muhammad Ali's opposition to the war and, you know, all of the other conspiracy theories you might have heard from Dick Gregory and then James Baldwin, you know, speaking about all of the oppression. I mean, you say one thing, but you do something else. So, you know, it's, you know, interesting. It just made me, when you were reading that poem, it made me think of a lot of the greats that were speaking about all of the, oppression that was going on with our people during that time and before.
Yeah, because, a lot of that, that was really kind of why I picked that particular piece, because a lot of the stuff they were talking about in that piece 50 years ago, yeah, those same concerns are out here in the world today. And people think that things just happen in a bubble, but there's a cause for every effect. Like the stuff we're seeing in the streets and stuff today, that's the effect. But people they focus on the effect, but all the other things that were done prior to that, that caused that to happen. Those are the things we really need to follow through on.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you. That was good information.
Thank you.
Right.
Now, right. Okay. Some now, regarding the other. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Beth.
Oh, no, I'll savor that and table it until after you finish.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to first bring up about the election was the constitutional amendment that's going to appear on the November 3rd ballot. I'm not sure if people are aware. But the constitutional amendment, this is regarding redistricting. So the constitutional amendment to change the legislative redistricting schedule if census data is delayed. Now, if you're agreeing with this, do you approve amending the Constitution to change when new legislative districts are created if the federal census data is delayed? The current COVID-19 pandemic has delayed census data collection. If New Jersey does not receive the census data in a timely manner, new legislative districts may not be ready in time for state legislative elections in the year ending. This change to the redistricting schedule will allow legislators to be elected that year from their existing districts for their 2-year term in office. The new districts will be used starting with the next scheduled general election for state legislature. That's what's going to happen if it's approved. Now, the interpreted statement is this constitutional amendment changes when new legislative districts are created if the federal census data is delayed. The United States Constitution requires that a census be taken every 10 years to count the people living in the country. Census data is then used to create new legislative districts to ensure residents have equal representation from elected officials. However, the current COVID-19 pandemic has delayed census data collection. This may delay census data to the states and may affect the creation of new legislative districts. The state constitution requires an apportionment commission to create new legislative districts every 10 years after the federal census is completed. If the census data is delayed, the new legislative districts may not be created in a timely manner to hold elections. This constitutional amendment requires the commission to delay creating the new districts if the governor receives the federal census data after February 15th of the year ending in one. The commission will adopt the new districts after the November general election, but not later than March 1st of the year ending in two. The new districts will be used starting with legislative elections in the year ending in three. They will continue to be used until new districts are again created by the apportionment commission after the next federal census. For the June primary and November general elections in the year ending in one, senators and assembly members will use their existing districts to run for a term of 2 years. The old districts will also be in effect in the year ending in two if any legislative election is held in that year. This amendment requires the commission to begin conducting its business when the governor receives the census data. It also requires the 11th member of the commission to be appointed by the Chief Justice of the New Jersey Supreme Court within 1 month after the governor receives the census data. Nothing in this amendment will alter the appointment of the members of the commission made by the state political party chairs. Now, that's a lot to take in, but I did notice that this is an amendment that's going on, it's going to be a part of our ballot. And not only do we have to pay attention, there's a lot of stuff that we have to do for this election as opposed to just going to and, you know, punching, the buttons in the machine. We have to make sure we get our ballots in the mail if we're not going to be able to hit one of the very few in-person polling offices that there's going to be. So this information you know, you need to go over it, ask questions from your legislators or other people who are knowledgeable about the election to find out exactly what this means and how it's really going to affect you. There's also several timelines that we need to be concerned with regarding our election this year. It says August 31st, nomination petition filing deadline for municipal nonpartisan candidates to be voted at the November general election. September 3rd, deadline for amendment to defective petitions for municipal nonpartisan candidates to be voted at the November election. Let's get down here to more specific for us voters. Let's see. Okay, September 14, deadline for preparation of official general election ballot for printing. The County Commissioner of Registration is to provide notice to the two county chairpersons of the date to inspect voting machines after they have been prepared for the upcoming election. This date will vary from county to county. September 19th, commencement of mailing of mail-in ballots for our general election. So that's the commencement of mailing of the mail-in ballots. That's September 19th, which 45 days before the election. October 13th, voter registration deadline for general election. That's 21 days before the election. October 13th, also, there's the mandated evening voter registration available for general election in offices of county commissions of registration. October 20th.
No,
deadline for, okay, October 20th, deadline for filing of challenger appointments for general election. October 25th through the 31st. Publication of notice of general election by county boards of election once during the calendar week prior to the election. On the 27th of October, publication of challenge and complaint procedures for general election by county boards of election. Also on the 27th, deadline to apply for a mail-in ballot by mail for the general election, which seems awfully late. October 28th, mailing of sample ballots for the general election on or before noon on Wednesday preceding the election. And October 30th, deadline for application to receive general election mail-in ballots by electronic means for qualified overseas civilian and military voters. Now, this is coming in November, November 2nd, by 3 p.m., deadline for in-person mail-in ballot applications for general election. Whew, there's a lot going on, and then we have more that's in November past the date. Do you want to go over that now or for next week?
I don't know. That's up to you.
This,
I can
this
tell
is
you
a
one
lot
thing.
Of information. Fortunately, it's recorded, so maybe you can go back and read, listen, but it's a lot of information that I didn't know about the election. But they have a lot of things for us to do in order to vote this year.
You know, I spoke to Senator Rice one time. In fact, I interviewed him, and from the information that you just disseminated to the audience, which was, I have to admit, somewhat like, okay, it sounded almost redundant, and then some of it was different. And so at one point, civics was taught in high school. I don't know if anybody's on the line that remembers that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But today, civics is no longer taught in high school.
And needed, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, some of that stuff as I'm listening to you, I'm saying to myself, I need to hear this in layman's terms. How does this really
affect
me? Yes,
definitely with, yes, definitely with regard to that amendment.
You know, Mr. Harris, did you comprehend any of that?
It's a lot to follow. But I think it was done that way on purpose to confuse most people so that all of the positive things about that, because it's so redundant, is that you won't follow through on the things that are really
exactly
important.
Exactly. Right.
And, you know, so it was the same thing with the reapportionment of the census, because this whole gerrymandering thing is a big deal. And if you don't get the proper amount of, if you don't find out everybody who's in a particular area, you can have just a few people being able to get all the benefits from the government, where and everybody else can just take a back seat. I think it's done on purpose.
Right. That's what it sounds. So that's most of this is extremely confusing.
Right. And so it warrants us to become politically astute. And, you know, I need to reach out to someone to decipher the information and just bring it down to basic. And Val, I know you're capable of doing that, right? But you're disseminating the information, and it would be great to have someone to just give us the X's and O's and what's important, what's not. But Mr. Harris, you bring the gerrymandering and the representation of a community that is not represented. You bring that to light, and that's very important. Val, were you going to say something?
Yes. No, I'm just saying, it was a lot that I read, but a lot that I don't understand, and I very much would appreciate us getting more clarification of it.
I'll get working on. I'll go to work on that one for our next Saturday show. Right now, I'm going to continue the show with what's happening for us now. For those of you in the audience, what's happening for us is a compilation and a rendering of current events, programs, lectures, and of the immediate contemporary interest in the broader community and the listening audience. That's you out there. It's designed to excite and inform and channel you, yeah, that's right, you, in participation and attendance and support of community-based activities. Now, today, the People's Organization of Progress are going to hold a national reparations rally starting at 3 p.m. on Broad and Market Street in Newark, New Jersey. That's the People Organization of Progress and a national reparations rally, right? For more information, you can dial 801-0001. Again, for the reparations rally, which begins at 3 p.m. in Newark, New Jersey, on Broad and Market Street, for more information, contact 801-001. And I need to add, most importantly, they are adhering to COVID-19 guidelines, and you're asked to practice it by wearing a mask, gloves, and social distancing. Now, as I continue, I want to highlight the Moonlight Cinema in the city of Newark, which is a new drive-in theater that shows films made by African-American creators and actors. Now, the owners is a husband and wife, Siri and Ayana Morris, and they wanted to always open up a movie theater in their hometown, which is the city of Newark. The drive-in theater is located at the former site of the Newark Bears, the Newark Eagle, Bears Eagle Stadium on Broad Street, the Riverfront Stadium at 54 Bridge Street. It's the first time in Newark, New Jersey's largest city
that we've had a drive-in since 1980. Now, the theater actually occupies 7.41 acres, and they have a screen that's it's a 55-foot screen, and it can accommodate, the drive-in theater can accommodate, get this, 300 cars and about 1,500 guests nightly. And the screenings start every Thursday, and originally we're going to Sunday, but because of the Be Still Sunday night, it goes from Thursday until Saturday night. So tonight they'll be featuring a movie. They ask that you, if you're going to go, to get there early. Yeah, guests nightly all. Most importantly, again, they ask that you adhere to the COVID-19 guidelines. If you're getting out of your car, you must have on a mask. You're able to order food online. You're able to purchase your tickets for the drive-in theater online. It's a nightly event. They're going to go up until October 4th, in fact, and that'll be the end of their season. Now, they're looking to extend that October 4th date a little further, and they're working on that. I think it's Michael B. Jordan has contributed by helping them secure one of Spike Lee's movies. But if you want to find out more information, you go to Moonlight Cinema Online. They have a website, okay, and you can find out more information. That's Moonlight Cinema. Now, let me bring Walter in. Walter, I know we lost you for a moment.
Oh, Linda.
Yeah. But I think you're back. Are you back, Walter? Okay. How many of you remember going to a drive-in movie theater?
Here. Hold on.
I guess I was trying to ask Walter if he's never been to a drive-in. You know, it seems like they kind of went out of style. But due to the pandemic, it's forced us to do things in a different way.
And Mr. Bay, did you say you've gone? Have you gone to the new theater?
No, but I definitely wanted to highlight it on our community bulletin board today to give them a big up because it's a black-owned business.
Right.
Right. I haven't been to the drive-in since it was like in East North, down near the highway and stuff. Right, near the Pulaski Highway, in fact. Anyway.
Right.
Right. So I would like to ask anyone who would like any one of our listening guests who are online right now, I'd like to ask for them to let me just call out your number, 6778. Will you please mention your name and make a quick comment?
This is actually Walter. It wouldn't let me get back on my other phone, so I switched, and, yeah.
You ever been to a drive-in, Walter?
A drive-in? No.
Oh, okay.
But my dad's been to one.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he has, but I just wanted to ask you, right? You have to experience it. You have to check it out. Walter, let me ask you, what is your appraisal of today's show? What did you think?
I think it was another show that we incorporated, like, more, like, people and, like, work of people that we probably didn't really hear of. I know for the first poem, most of us really didn't know about them or know about that poem. And also the couple of diamonds we did today, we didn't know, like, Bessie Coleman and my other diamond, Ellen Craft. I guess some of us didn't know who those crazy people like were. So I liked how we keep incorporating new people into the show.
Mr. Harris, what did you think about today's show?
It was very informative, especially to me, the segment that Val was giving us about this voting and how it seems like they're trying to make it as hard as possible for us to understand what's going on. I'm glad she gave us some kind of clarity because there's a lot, and she only talked about one aspect of the whole ballot. The ballot is a lot longer than that, and, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff, and I'm glad she, you know, we're putting it out there for the people to hear.
Okay, Val,
you know,
Mr. Harris, I'm sorry. Did you want to add something?
No.
Val, what's your retrospective of today's broadcast? What you think?
Enjoyed it. Like Walter was saying, he brought up diamonds that I hadn't heard of. I had heard the name Bessie Coleman, but really wasn't familiar with her accomplishment. So, you know, it was good information to find out, and it's nice to continue to advance our knowledge of our history. And I'm just looking forward to you getting the experts to decipher, you know, this upcoming election, because it's coming on fast, and I want to make sure that all those who are prepared and you know, and wanting to vote get that opportunity and make sure their vote is counted.
Right. And are able to vote and comprehensively understand what
mm-hmm.
in the world is going on. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
My last words for today is we are happy to announce that we will be returning safely to the airwaves of WSOU 89.5 FM HD starting September 12, 2020. Yeah, that's right. We going back, baby. Our same time will be from 7 to 8 a.m. And, of course, you can check out our redial, which is going to be on Blog Talk Radio. And that's Blog Talk Radio is online, not just on Facebook, folks. It's just posted there, right? In any event, I'm happy to say that if you miss our broadcast at 7 o'clock in the morning, you can pick it up and listen to it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on Blog Talk Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we have indeed stepped into the future, and we have grabbed and took hold of the gauntlet of virtual media and online communication, and we will be doing it safely from WSOU remotely. And on that note, I would like to thank everyone once again, and I want to remind you that while we don't answer all your questions, we do make an honest attempt to bring valid and important information to your attention. I thank you very much for tuning in, and Quest Youth Radio is
the best youth radio.
Okay, yeah, you don't sound enthusiastic. Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio.
Best youth radio.
Yeah. That's right. I can feel it. Thank you very much. And on that note, that's a wrap, everybody. Thank you very much. And nothing but love goes out to everybody online and all the listenership who support. Thank you again. Peace.